back with episode 502 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm still recovering from 500. Don't know why it skipped an episode.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and no, we're still going strong. You know, I wish we could have taken a picture of that, but I guess since we do audio, we really can't get a snapshot.
No, we really can't. And I just happen to think it's amazing that Dragon Con is so powerful that it survives the zombie apocalypse. Although I am now convinced that the entire thing began in room 1614.
Absolutely.
All right, and I want to hear from people that know the reference. Okay. Yes, we are going to be continuing quite a bit of our episodic discussion after a few news items. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
Our policy here is to discuss just about anything that might have happened on the interwebs in these episodes, anywhere else we can think of. So you will be spoiled. But we try and wait a week or so before we do that to you.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. But we have a few things news-wise that we want to cover. And we are going to go ahead and start with, let's see, which one do I want to start with? Thinking about it. Actually, I'm going to start with a breaking news item here, because it just came across my line.
Ah.
Yeah. AMC has renewed Hell on Wheels for a fifth and final season.
Ah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I catch it sometimes, and I have to admit it's enjoyable. The story as a whole doesn't seem to hold together for me, but the individual episodes are good.
Okay, now, if anybody remembers back some of our discussion from episode 500, the final season with the last chapter getting split into two halves.
Well,
AMC will divide the final season into two parts, the first seven episodes in the summer of 2015, the final seven episodes in the summer of
2016, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we really should talk about it as multiple miniseries at this point, and it is no longer a season.
Mm-hmm.
No. You split that kind of time.
Yep.
Not really, no. All right, well, I believe that we have here an article. I know that we kind of jumped around, but Edmund, you had mentioned during episode 500, sci-fi getting involved in some classic or literary sci-fi adaptations.
Yes.
And we have an article here towards the bottom of the list after the discussion about the Star Wars title, which we covered in that now already classic episode 500.
Yes, indeed. No, well, not content to just raid the Arthur C. Clarke Library, SIFI and Universal Cable Productions have announced some casting for their adaptation of Lev Grossman's international New York Times best-selling books trilogy on the Magicians. We have Stella Maeve from Chicago PD, Hale Appelman from Teeth, and Arjun Gupta from Nurse Jackie, all announced in key roles for the upcoming pilot. Filming in New Orleans, and I honestly do not know much about this book series, so just judging from these character descriptions, we have a wealthy and brilliant Ivy Leaguer who seems destined for success, but her plans are forever altered when she is denied admittance to the mysterious Breakbills College of Magical Pedagogy. So that's sounding familiar to something else that ran for quite a few movies, but we will have to wait and see how this does.
Yes, this seems to strike me as perhaps, and I don't know, someone out there might be able to correct me, but another of these YA trilogy adaptations. But
yes.
We shall find out. Talking about franchises that no one expected to come back, Disney has announced that John Lasseter will be directing Toy Story 4.
Wow.
In June 2017.
If they make me cry again, I'm going to be really mad, because 3 had me in tears at the end, and I hadn't realized that Lasseter would go back to directing again. You know, he's pretty high in not only in Pixar, but in Disney in general. He's, you know, he's pretty much a director at the company, so it's almost a step down for him, but gosh, he knows how to, you know, trigger, you know, fire on all cylinders for these things. You know, I can think back before he was even involved in Pixar in Brave Little Toaster. He was doing amazing work then, and I still think he could pull it out. I'm a little surprised they were able to pull out the chair and have him sit in it. So,
Yeah, I was a little shocked when that came across the news feed, but there we are. Let's see. Looks like there's some news about Gotham, Gary.
Oh, sweet heavens. Yes, Gotham. has announced that they will be adding Baby Scarecrow to its gallery of child robes. You know, they want us to see how Gotham develops and how all the crazy people come into being. They've introduced, you know, of course, we're familiar with, you know, Penguin, as well as Selina becoming Catwoman. And now they're going to be introducing Scarecrow. Again, I'm always concerned when they throw these sort of, you know, introductions out, because we know where it's going to end up. So we'll have to see.
I don't know. I find children frightening. So, yeah, this might actually be the perfect direction to go.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be, as the character grows up, he's going to be, you know, sort of a psychiatrist who's fascinated by fears and phobias. And while they haven't really gone into what this person's origin will be, I imagine at some point it's going to have something to do with fear. They have already sort of introduced the concept of the Arkham Asylum already in the renovations of sections of Gotham. So we'll have to see where they feel it fitting in. But given how sort of lockstep they are to, you know, push these characters through to the point where they need to end up, I can't imagine it's going to stray much.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, it sounds like they're continuing the same vein that perhaps has not been as satisfying as we had hoped it would be up to this point. Talking about YA adaptations that may be coming to a screen near you, Netflix is developing a live-action TV show based on Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. Of course, there's been a film adaptation of this with Jim Carrey sometime in the past. But this is a bit of a different way of going forward. I guess there are about 13 books in the series, so who knows what this is going to be based on. But yeah, again, Netflix really just proliferating in terms of the content that they have out there. I'll just go ahead and take this next one as well. So we now have a little bit more clarification on when Agent Carter is going to start. It seems like it's going to be 8 weeks, 8 episodes, starting on January 6th. And immediately after that is done, the second half of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 will play. Once Upon a Time is doing something similar, and during its break, we're going to have the musical series Gallivant.
We're allowed to drink during that, right? Because I think we're going to need it.
I think
if it's, you know, all things said and done, Disney does quite well with musicals, so maybe
if they can somehow make that movie Enchanted and pull off an 8-episode limited series version of that on TV, it might actually work. Because that movie was fairly clever. So It definitely has its moments. So we'll see how that works. And here we go. Another breaking news item here. And Gary, you might actually enjoy this news. Marvel's Agent Carter, as we just mentioned, is going to be adding Bridget Regan to the cast as Peggy's neighbor, Dottie. Small town girl from Iowa who will have a huge impact on the life of Agent Carter.
Okay.
I find it interesting. I didn't realize that Agent Carter was going to be such a limited run series. I had assumed it was going to be at least like a 13 to 16 episode run. As I started to hear this notice, I was sort of surprised when I heard it's an 8-episode series. Had they mentioned such a limited run before?
Yeah, when it was announced, it was announced as a limited run. I think the thing was that they weren't sure that the show would be able to. It had worked well as a one-shot, but I don't know that they knew it would work well as a series. So this feels to me like it's almost a not quite a backdoor pilot season, but close. Because they're already feeding in and setting things up for the Agent Carter series in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in flashbacks. So I don't know. We'll see how it works out. From what I understand, the character of Agent Carter and characters related to Agent Carter are going to be showing up all over the place. So, we'll see. That's it for the news items. So, we are going to go into our break, and when we come back, it will be time for episodic discussion. So, stay tuned. All right, and let's go ahead and, Edmund, you never actually have gotten a chance to make a decision last time, because I kind of co-opted it by choosing elementary, so what would you like to cover first?
Why don't we talk about The Walking Dead?
All right, and here's the promo.
Microsoft Surface presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
How's it been? How's it with her for a while?
She good.
She's just gone.
But she's alive.
Black car, the white cross painted on it. I tried to follow her. She's alive.
For more video, go to AMC.com.
All right, and if you could do the enormously terrible recap. I mean, this is going to take forever.
Yeah, deep breath.
Breathe.
Yes, The Walking Dead, Season 5, Episode 4, Slab Town. A group of other survivors are encountered.
Oh, geez, I hate when they give it away in the, I know.
Yeah.
You know, Gary, you say that, and yet there's a part of me that was... When I read that, And you know, because you read the comics as well, you know what comes after the hunters. And so I was thinking that's exactly where they were going with this. And instead, they gave us the episode that they did.
Yes.
So, yeah, it sometimes they do seem they're giving something away, and they are not. But at any rate, what would you give this one, Edmund?
I will give this one a 7.5.
Okay. And Gary, how about you?
I will give it a 6.5.
All right. And our reader over at VogNetwork.com, Mr. Flacco Jones, a very prolific commenter over on that site, gave it a 6, and I gave it a 6.5.
Oh, boy.
So this one, I think it's safe to say this is the lowest scored episode of The Walking Dead since pretty much ever.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to go on record saying that my score, be it low, real, I don't want people to think it's just because of the cast that was or was not in the episode. While we enjoy Rick and the gang, that wasn't what dropped it in ratings for me, was not seeing some of our regular people. So I just wanted to put that out in the beginning.
No, and I completely agree with you. It wasn't necessarily the lack of those people, but rather what they replaced it with. At least for me, it was this collection of characters that were ill-defined. I still don't know what the heck Dawn's motivations were. The episode begins with Beth waking up and being told a whole ton of lies, and it never came of anything. At least not yet. But I think the bigger problem on my end, and I know that this is what a lot of people have said, and I'm imagining that, you know, tell me if I'm wrong that this is also how you felt, Gary and Edmund, but the fact that last season we had this run of a handful of episodes that kind of went off the traditional chronological order in order to tell the kind of the side story of what the governor was doing during the plague at the prison. And at least that worked because it was focusing on the main villain and his motivations. They're doing the same thing in this season to give the main cast a bit of a break. But what they replaced it with didn't work. At least not for me. It's basically taking a sidestep back into a flashback of what happened after Daryl and, or before Daryl and Carol say, or followed that car a couple episodes back. If Carol hadn't shown up at the very end of the episode, I'd have no idea when this took place.
Right.
What was going on? And I'd have no reason to even anticipate the mass bloodletting that there better be to make up for the fact that I don't care about any of these people. The only one I care about is Beth, and even she didn't get really a chance to do that much. Gary, I mean, add to that?
Most of the plot seemed, you know, reasonably transparent that this wasn't some sort of safe haven of a place. It was, you know, she was definitely, you know, a prisoner above and beyond, quote, having to work off your fair share, which in and of itself wasn't horrible. You know, it's interesting as we see all these different sort of, you know, pocket communities of people trying to survive, and you see what they give up and what they don't give up to, you know, to get by day to day. And at first you think to yourself, gosh, they really didn't give up much here as far as, you know, rule of law and, you know, civil behavior to each other and trying to help somebody in need. But then, the curtain gets pulled back and you see that, no, they give up a lot. It's, you know, dictatorial rule. You're trapped, you're trapped there. And, you know, a whole host of other, abuses and, and things that you have to put up with if you want to stay within this, you know, this safe haven. So, you know, more and more, you know, Rick's group looks like it's not that bad. On the other hand, I just want to mention that, you know, it's interesting that unlike Rick, who chose to walk away from Atlanta, you know, these are people who are getting by, you know, in the town, and, you know, that there are a lot of resources, and it's interesting sort of the quality of life to some extent, as well as, you know, what you can do in the city as opposed to our group who have really been living out in the wilderness on the fringes. You know, it makes me wonder, you know, maybe they should have stayed in town. It might be, you know, something that's, you know, possible to, you know, live through with a lot better, you know, a better roof over your head and more resources to draw upon.
Yeah, what was weird to me in that regard, though, is that, and I don't know if they're going to explain this at all, but Beth knows, despite the fact that she's been told that basically everybody has to stay in the hospital because there's no way out that's safe, yet people go out and routinely pick up survivors, bring them to the hospital.
Into the hospital.
So they clearly get out.
Yeah.
And safely come back. Just saying. I don't know. It was like, so wait, why? Like, we didn't get to see her really question a lot. She kind of had to be told that, oh yeah, you're being lied to and there is a way out. And then the way that they decide to go out really doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, because it's not like they do the logical thing and just observe how people are kind of moving around. But,
well, it even gets me that something as simple as them you know, obviously, as you said, they're making these raids, yet the fence isn't intact around where I'm assuming their vehicles are.
Yeah. Well, I guess zombies technically aren't going to go joyriding, but
no,
perimeter security, probably a big deal in the middle of Atlanta at that point. Edmund, what do you want to add to this discussion?
Yeah, I guess for me, I mean, this is a case of where my slightly more positive rating was because at a certain point in this episode, I just decided they were trying to be surreal, and it wasn't supposed to hang together.
Hence the comment in the previous episode of the David Lynch version of The Walking Dead.
Exactly.
I wish that there were red curtains and dwarves involved in this, because then at least it would have been more obvious. But
yes.
But it was a bit too much of a departure, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just thought you saw everything that was coming. There was no real shock or surprise in this once everything was set up. You know, it played out, unfortunately, very stereotypically, which, you know, isn't the case for this show. They usually, you know, keep you on edge and turn things just a slightly different way than you expect it to end, where this, you know, pretty much ended right where I expected it to, so...
Yeah, I don't know what else there really is to say about it. It's
it was nice that the main cast got some time off.
Well, not to mention that as someone who always attends Dragon Con every year, we got to see the some of the host hotels and that they still exist, albeit in rough condition.
Yes.
I know a lot of fans who do attend that con were mentioning that in various online forums and things of that nature. There's even a popular group of characters that do TV shows that clean up places that were brought up as, hey, they need to get to work.
Yes, and as we alluded to earlier, we now have a little more insight into how the whole thing began. Yes. And I just have to say, I'm sorry, Eugene, there's just not going to be a way to solve that problem. No. Yes, okay, well, then we are going to move on to the next topic, and Gary, I believe it is your turn.
Yes, I think this is the best episode title this week, so I want to go ahead and talk about Grimm.
All right, Grimm, and here is the promo.
Clear! We're losing him!
Time of death, 1:34 p.m.
Let the game begin.
To beat Gatlin, you need a Hexen Beast like me.
Maybe we shouldn't fix this.
You don't want us to help Nick?
She's a Grimm. And I'm not.
I don't know where I am.
All new.
Grimm. Next Friday, 9/8.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We're talking about Grimm, Season 4, Episode 2, Octopus Head. Nick ponders whether he wants his Grimm abilities back as he and Hank continue to track a Vessin that's stealing memories from its victims. Meanwhile, Adeline learns that she has a connection to Nick, and a recovering Captain Renard has a mysterious visitor.
Yeah, you got to admire, you know, the fact that they really pinned that one right on the nose with the title. Yeah. Octopus Head. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Well, it's about that. We'll just go with that. That's fine.
Yeah. It kind of sums it up. What would you give this one, do you think?
I would give this one a 7.5.
All right, and I gave this one an 8. So for me, it was a bit of a jump up from the premiere, and for you, it was a slight tick down. Any particular reason, or?
Yeah, I didn't feel the supporting cast really pulled their weight this episode, and not. I don't mean from an acting point of view. I just mean from the storyline. Typically, I feel that the supporting cast is significantly involved, almost to the point I don't like to call them supporting cast. But in this one, it really felt like everybody was played down a lot.
For me, I guess. I like the fact that in the premiere, I was a little disappointed with the idea that Nick's condition was going to be continuing past the premiere. I almost But this episode gave me reason to think that it would be a lot more interesting than I was giving them credit for. And I like the fact that they were playing up these different aspects of what that could mean. You know, what is trouble of the incredibly unfortunate name going to be doing? And how is that going to play into how, for instance, Wu is going to be confronting Nick. I mean, it can't be very long now before he gets the truth out of Nick. Renard is back. I felt that was a bit of a loss in the first episode because I really dig that character. I just really the only thing holding me back was that the whole the octopus head Vezin just still. I feel like it didn't come to anything. The story just never went anywhere.
Well, it definitely was a villain of the week type of thing, basically to show, you know, Nick without powers, you know, and how he does things and reacts and the choices that he's got to make as a result of it. So it was more of just a mirror to some extent to show us how Nick is doing things now. And while I've seen this depowered trope before in books as well as in movies and TV series, I sort of like the idea that they're going to flesh it out, that it wasn't just one episode gimmick that goes right away. I'd like to see, you know, Nick having to live as a regular person, knowing what he knows. In some ways, it's almost the opposite of Wu that we were talking about. You know, a regular guy who knows about all this crazy stuff. Now, obviously, Nick's much more well-grounded in it, but, you know, in some sense, it does become a little bit of a yin and a yang. They're both regular people now having to deal with it.
Yeah, I guess what I was referring to more was that they kept showing what the Vezin's kind of mission was in terms of getting the secret information and all of that. And they spent so much time on it between the two episodes, I figured, oh, it's got to come to something, right? It's got to mean something. And it didn't come to anything.
Anytime a season opens, you never know what's going to be brought in. So yeah,
exactly. I was like, oh, what could this possibly mean? And it was just kind of there. Anyway, I don't foresee military secrets becoming a big deal for the overall mythology, but I don't know. I guess maybe, possibly. All right, well, let's see. Anything else to say about it then, other than the fact that just wondering where it's going to go from here?
No, but I was, I was a bit torn with Captain Renard. I was really hoping that he was dead in some sense for the implications that might bring, but at the same time, I enjoy the character, so I am glad he returned.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Adeline, and I was kind of like, well, okay, hey, Adeline, let's go take this little stroll down into the dungeons. Oh, yeah, okay. This isn't strange at all.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Edmund, I know that you don't watch Grimm, so yes. Certainly you didn't have anything to add to that particular show discussion, but let's go ahead and give you the opportunity to turn it around, and what would you like to discuss next?
Well, let's see. Well, since I just got a break, I believe we would be giving Gary a break if we talked about the latest episode of the 100.
Yes, we would, I believe. And let's go ahead then and run the promo.
Clark,
you still haven't seen her?
I'm gonna get you out of here.
There are some lines you can't uncross.
Reverse it. We need to stick together.
Negan, there is no we.
Okay, and if you could do the recap, please.
Certainly. This is the 100 Season 2, Episode 3, Repercussions. Clark gains an unlikely ally. Later, Abby confesses to committing a crime.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give this one?
I will give this a 7.5.
That's exactly where I fell.
Our lockstep continues on this one.
That's exactly. It's amazing. Yeah. I'm curious as to what your reasons were, and to see if they might.
I guess the primary thing for me is this was the episode where I started worrying about them keeping all of these various different groups straight, and particularly among the Grounders, Reapers, sort of all these different factions of disheveled native dwellers that they've started, and especially of course with the arc and the adults being back in the picture as well. They've still got some shaking out to do in terms of really establishing this this new world order. It was feeling a little cluttered to me this time around.
Yeah, that was part of it for me. It got to the point where when I saw yet another group of Grounders, I had no idea who was supposed to be with them.
Yes.
And it might have even taken more away from the episode if it wasn't for the fact that I thought it was pretty ballsy of the CW to have essentially a lashing take place. They managed to not make it nearly as graphic as, say, something that would have been on cable, but it still was more than I thought that they would do. I figured they would cut away before they did, and so I was rather impressed by that.
Yes, definitely.
If there's one thing this show does not steer away from, it's the consequences of choices, and they will push things about as far as they can go. The body count is always very high, so
yes.
And I guess, you know, counterbalancing that was the one character whose name escapes me. It's the sister, Bellamy's sister, pining after Lincoln.
Yes,
that's getting old.
That's always been the element of the show where it is it's like the one concession to the CW cliche about everything having to be a teen drama, and it does kind of feel like they do almost feel like they have to have that in there somewhere, and unfortunately that's where it's landing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you counterbalance that with Clark, the ostensible lead character that, for a teen character on the CW, is remarkably strong.
Mm-hmm.
Played, of course, by a gorgeous Australian actress.
Yes.
Just gonna
say. Yep. Yeah, and and notably, I mean, it's strong and notably not getting hung up over the boy she is supposed to be with or she thinks she should be with, and
she's more likely to just go ahead and stab him.
Yes, exactly.
Just for fun. I mean, she is incredibly pragmatic when it comes to just doing whatever it takes to survive, and yeah, I like that. I like the fact that she's a lot more canny than one would expect of the character of that age, which does a lot more to underscore who she was supposed to be when she was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these shows, they introduce a character, say how unique and strong they are, and then it never actually gets shown in their choices. I think she's kind of being developed more in tune with who she's supposed to be. A very unique way, or the right way of doing things, perhaps, which is in and of itself unique in many ways. But
yeah.
One of the reasons why this show is so high on our list, as we mentioned back in episode 500,
yeah,
which we name check constantly right now. All right. Anything more about this episode of the 100?
No, but I did just want to mention that, aside from the fact that it's Paige Turco, we all know from Person of Interest, you know, is one of my favorites. But I do also like the way that, in terms of Clark's development, they are throwing in that layer of showing where she's getting it from in terms of her mother's strength and questioning of authority, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, that's another nice element where this show that everybody thought was, you know, it was just going to be near future Lord of the Flies, you know, is actually taking the situation it's in and really working its plot out from the ramifications of that situation. And except for these occasional little, you know, the times that it rears its head, I mean, says staying away from the cliches, which has been really notable.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before I do want to wrap this episode up with the quick hits in a little bit, but before we do that, Gary, would you like to cover the episode of Haven?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
All right.
Let's see what trouble we can get into.
let's run that that promo.
Someone is killing ghosts. What are you going to call?
Dark Side Seekers, we hunt what's haunting you.
We should still have an electromagnetic presence, and that Daddy can track.
I'm going to save Nathan.
Haven, on an all-new night and time, next Friday at 7, part of Sci-Fi's 31 Days of Halloween.
Okay, and that would be Haven Season 5, Episode 8, Exposure. Audrey is forced to call in some outside help to cope with the harsh new reality that she is no longer immune to the troubles and Nathan may be lost forever. Okay, what would you give this one?
I would give it an 8.5.
Okay. And while I go and just check that I didn't actually write a review for this one, I don't recall now if I did. 8.5, I think that actually is one of the higher... It is, in fact, matching the premiere in terms of the highest scored episode for you this season. What were some of the things that you enjoyed so much about this one?
I enjoyed the playing of Mara, actually, being trapped down in the boat, and Nathan talking to her, and she was the only one that could see him, and so I enjoyed that interaction. I enjoyed her attempts at manipulation, but that didn't work. We're really sort of seeing Mara detoothed. She really doesn't have any real push or as much power as she had enjoyed at the beginning of the season or last season. She's virtually helpless, and as best I can tell, she's sort of Audrey before Mara came around. I don't really see that she's got any real special powers other than being able to change troubles, I guess, would still be a special power. And I wonder if Audrey had that all along too, just didn't really use it or use it in a way that we didn't quite notice. So that was really enjoyable. I enjoyed Audrey still attempting to troubleshoot this whole trouble that happened. I thought that was interesting. They brought in that ghost hunter guy, and it actually was, his technology actually worked, which was, interesting, as well as the version of this trouble I thought was fun. I enjoyed the whole subplot of the people in the cemetery and, Nathan them thinking themselves actually, dead and just walking the earth. So I thought this had a lot of good ideas, and I thought it all came together really well. I thought it was pretty well balanced.
I think that we liked a lot of the same things with one small notable exception. I definitely agree with you about the Duke and Mara scenes. I think that they were much stronger than I had anticipated they would be. What maybe didn't work for me as much was the ghost hunter guy. I remember not really liking that character when he was introduced last season in his Dark Side Seekers or whatever nonsense that was. And I felt he was equally kind of obnoxious this time too. So having him come back and be so prominent, I don't know. It felt like they were going for quirky and he just wasn't really doing that.
Well, I really liked the idea that they were able to take this old character who was pretty much mocked, if I remember correctly, the episode, and actually, effectively make use of him. I thought that was great thinking on Audrey's part, as well as the writers, to, bring back an old character that way.
Yeah, I guess, for me, there was something that was done similarly on Supernatural, and I think it was done better there.
Well, after 200 episodes, everything's been done.
But at any rate, I gave it a 7.5, so it's not that far off. And at the end of the day, this is the highest scored episode for Haven this season, and hopefully they're back on track. We'll see. Maybe this will be the end of stretching one trouble across two episodes. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. No? Okay. We'll find out. All right, well, we definitely wanted to get to some of the quick hits this week. And I don't know, Gary, if you happened to see both of these episodes of Star Wars Rebels?
No, sir, I have not.
Okay. Well, very quickly, I'll just go through. We have Season 1, Episode 4, Rise of the Old Masters. The Rebels undertake a daring rescue mission only to find themselves facing a powerful foe. And you said that you did not see this one. This one I would give an 8. It was actually quite good. Probably the strongest episode of the series yet. since the premiere for me, at least. And then there was season one, episode five. I think I'm actually getting the numbering wrong. I think that the other one was five, and this is episode six. Breaking Ranks. Ezra goes undercover inside the Empire to retrieve vital information for an operation, and I would give that one a 7. Still good, but not quite on the level of the previous episode. So gaining a little bit of ground, but still not quite at the level of average by our measure. And now we have a different show that I think, Gary, you'll have a little bit more to talk about, so why don't you go ahead and cover these real quick. The first one.
This would be Constantine. Okay. I didn't realize this had been put into the quick hits. Anyway.
Yeah, all new shows are going there until we decide whether or not they're good enough to move up into the main area. So.
Fair enough. Anyway, yeah, Constantine, Season 1, Episode 1, Non-Est Asylum. A seasoned demon hunter and master of the occult gets pulled back into battling the worst hell has to offer in order to help the daughter of an old friend, and because there's the slight possibility of saving his own damned soul.
Yes, okay. Now, what would you give that episode, Gary?
I will give it a 7.
All right. Edmund, you watched this episode?
I did see the pilot, yes. Which thankfully is not named Pilot, I just realized. Wow.
Yeah, right?
Got a little extra point right there.
I think that might be the same for me. I'm giving it a 6.5.
Okay. Over on VogNetwork.com, perhaps appropriately, we have a reader whose name was William Murderface. Seems to know. He gave this an 8. However, his was a dissenting opinion from my review, which gave it a, what would this be? I guess a 5.5.
Ooh.
Yes. Now, I'll just start with my quick bullet points and then what Mr. Murderface said as a dissenting opinion. My opinion basically comes down to this. I did say that among the good things, I didn't feel like it would take a whole lot for this to the potential here to be met.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like this was just a very bland pilot, just rote. I didn't feel like the characters were very memorable, and most especially the problem was that Liv was, they spent so much time setting her up, and she's a character that only shows up in the pilot. She leaves at the end.
Yes.
And I was we're wasting so much time on this character. And I understand, they made the pilot and then decided to go with a different actress, a different character for the rest of the series. Then replaced the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just felt like a complete waste of time. And my problem right now, initially with Constantine as a character, is that he was so iconic. I understand, at the time that character was introduced in the comics in Hellblazer, he was edgy, he was unique, he was something new that people really hadn't seen before. But in the years since, we've got a million different examples of this exact same type of character in other shows that I think have done better than this particular depiction does, at least right now. The actor is trying his best to kind of show that he's, you know, this smart aleck, you know, dark arts guy. And quite frankly, I think Edmund and I were talking about this offline early, you know, at an earlier point, and we were saying that he was basically, this character was the archetype for Castiel on Supernatural, and Castiel pulls off the character better.
Yes.
And he's an angel. So it's a little weird, I think that's the problem, is that Constantine, that character archetype has become so familiar that it's hard to really make him stand out now. What William Murderface says, I love that name, he says, I understand the point about the pilot's poor introduction to people who are not Hellblazer fans. It does start in a strange place, and since if the characters are not as fleshed out as they could have been, or seems... But anyway, that being said, from a fan of Hellblazer, I think the pilot started in an excellent location, and I think they started it there as an ode to Constantine's general character in Hellblazer. He is DC's greatest con artist, and his magic is secondary to that. Okay, that's great. I didn't get that out of the pilot.
No.
And that's where we have this distinction between an 8 for somebody who really felt like it was a great representation of what they got out of the character from their long history with the character in the original source material, versus somebody who never read Hellblazer that went into this pilot and just felt like, what's the big deal? The character did not a lot for me. Gary.
Yes.
You probably know the character better than I do. That's for
yes,
sure.
Yes, I've known. I've been a companion of John's for many years. Yes, I have. Okay. And that almost is part of my complaint with this episode. It tracked, and I'll mention this in reference to the second episode as well. It tracks so much like a comic book. I almost want to go back and pull out my collection to find out the episode that this videotaped. because that's, I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing to be faithful to the source or the, you know, the original concept behind it, but they are photocopying it. As I said, I feel like I've seen this episode. I've read this comic book that they're playing this before. His costume does, and I literally refer to it as a costume, does not move. I think his collar is like bolted into place where it stays the exact same way. His tie doesn't move. His collar is up. His trench coat is wrinkled in the exact same place. How many copies of this thing do they have for him to shoot? But and that's, I'm actually saying that as a complaint because I want to say they're being too honest to the source material. And if they can't do that and do a TV show, because what you do for a comic book, you're not going to do for a TV show. There has to be differences just from that very structure, and I get the sense that they're not having any difference. They're trying to be so accurate to it that I think it's sort of trapped in a hole, and you see the weaknesses where as a comic book it would be fine, but as a TV show it fails, and that's part of one of the reason that I actually rated it down lower than it might have done, because it's too stiff, it's too much in the mold of where it comes from and not finding its own place.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that scene at the very end of the pilot where he is in the alley and he's being ambushed and he sets his hands on fire, it felt so staged. Mm-hmm. Feel natural at all.
Yeah.
But you make a really good point. His wardrobe, and this seems like a nitpick, it's too clean. It's too pristine. It's too much like a costume. Because if this guy is supposed to be kind of grungy and in the shadows and stuff, I would expect it to look lived in. It doesn't look lived in. Not to me, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The tie being kind of half undone and the collar open looks more like an affectation than something that's actually true to the character.
And it stays consistent throughout both episodes.
Yeah.
So moving on then to the second episode, if you don't mind doing the recap real quick.
Sure, no problem. We're talking about Constantine, Season 1, Episode 2, The Darkness Beneath. An ancient Welsh spirit torments a small mining town in western Pennsylvania, where John makes a powerful new ally in the mysterious young woman named Zed.
Yes, and what would you give this one?
7.5.
Okay, and I give this a 6.5, so at the very least I kind of went up a point. Points given, in my opinion, to Zed as a much better companion character than Liv.
Yes.
I like Lucy Griffiths, who played Liv, but there was no chemistry whatsoever, at not in a romantic sense, but just in terms of just acting with Constantine. I think the actress that played Zed was a lot more natural, brought more to her role. The thing that kind of took away from that was the plot itself. Felt so overly familiar. And part of me, and I didn't really put this in my review, but part of it was, you're sitting there and you're referring to the fact that, oh, there's a dragon under this mine and all this, and I'm like, well, I know you don't have the budget for that. We're not seeing that dragon. Damn it. Don't even mention it then. But you gave it a 7.5, so a little bit above the pilot. What was the difference for you?
Well, yeah, I agree. I liked Zed a little bit more. Also, I liked the whole conflict. I thought it was a much better fleshed out conflict than the pilot episode was. So, it did keep my attention. It felt like the character was expanding out a little bit. He was so limited in that pilot that, as I said, it was just such a stiff, locked performance that I really didn't, feel it warranted much. This one felt like he was spreading out just a little bit more, but still not great.
Yeah, the actor looks the part, but he needs to live in the part. And I don't think he's there yet. And until that happens, this is going to feel a bit average. And I feel like they're trying to push the boundaries, but you can tell they're trying. Where I feel right now is that, you remember the first season of Grimm?
Yes.
Where they really needed to kick things up a notch? That's where I feel like they are here. This feels like the first season of Grimm, the first season of Angel, the first season of all these shows that didn't really find themselves until well into their first season.
Well, really what it comes down to me, for me, is that I think they're trying to be too faithful to the comic book, to the source material. And if they would ease up a little bit on it, I think you'll find that the show gets better.
Mm, yeah, exactly. They need to kind of pave their own way.
Yes.
Not be slavish. They could probably, like I said, take a few things from Arrow and how to rethink things and think outside the box a little bit while being true to the intent of characters. But there we are. Okay, moving on from there, we have The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 5, The World Has Turned and Left Me Here. Elena invites Liam to attend a party at the corn maze. Caroline helps Stefan clean up a mess created by Enzo. Alaric and Joe try to save lives after a devastating accident. Tyler is put in a dangerous position when his werewolf curse is put to the test. Damon and Bonnie make an important discovery that affects their quest to get back home. And thankfully, Damon does get back home. Oops, spoiler. which helps things a bit. And plus, there was like a huge, devastating like accident that left people bloody and strewn across the entire cornfield. So that kind of amped things up a bit. I'll give this one a 7.5. Edmund, if you don't mind, the next one.
Certainly. That would be The Good Wife, Season 6, Episode 7, Message Discipline. Finn discovers a potentially devastating piece of evidence against Carrie that could impact Alicia and Peter. Meanwhile, Eli becomes wary when a new prospective candidate emerges in the race for state's attorney.
That's right, and I need to kind of look this one up. But Henry, I believe, has not... The previous two episodes had not been all that pleased with The Good Wife, so I'm curious as to what exactly he had to say about it. And he gave this one, come on, website, fognetwork.com, everyone, that's where you can go to see this. He gave this one an 8.5. So apparently
a rebound.
It did rebound. And Nadim over on his end, he gave this one, again, moving on, let's go, he gave this one a 9.5.
Ah.
So it definitely feels like this was a bit of a rebound from that perspective. Message Discipline is the name of this one. Just in case people wonder, hey, are they really doing all of this? Yep, we're really doing all of this on the fly. What's the next one here?
I believe it's yours, Resurrection.
Ah, yes, okay. Which is good. Let me just quickly... fix my thing there. Okay. So Resurrection, Season 2, Episode 6, Afflictions. A desperately ill Bellamy turns to his shadowy government contact for help and ends up learning something shocking about his own past. And the living seek answers after another returned vanishes into thin air.
Oh,
meanwhile,
that's not good.
A newcomer to Arcadia makes Henry an interesting offer. Yeah, I have to give them props for finding a way to incorporate the fact that the returned are coming from different time periods mm-hmm. to incorporate the Spanish flu of 1918 into the story.
Wow.
With its associated really nasty hemorrhaging and body count.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be a good time to make a PSA that people should go out and get their flu shots?
Yeah, probably.
Yes.
I give this one an 8, which has been kind of my default for this show of late. Again, this season is really just a huge improvement over the first season. A lot darker. Especially when you consider that Margaret, Michelle Fairley's character,
yes.
Kind of likes the fact that there are people dying left and right. So, yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, well, you know, she's feeling a little bitter about things. It's a holdover from something else.
She's really steeled her heart to that.
Yes.
Let's see here. We have next The Originals, Season 2, Episode 5, Red Door. Esther forces Elijah to relive a time long ago when he loved a young woman named Tatya. Meanwhile, Michael takes Cammy hostage in an effort to lure Klaus to himself, and Davina makes a troubling discovery about Caleb's true identity. Once again, the child exceeds the parent. And that is applicable in this case for the show right now in its plot. But this was a heck of an episode of the show. I gave it an 8.5. So the kind of high drama that was the part and parcel of The Vampire Diaries in its earlier seasons has transferred to The Originals, even as The Vampire Diaries has kind of fallen into a rut. It happens. What are you going to do? Edmund, if you could take the next one.
Certainly. That is American Horror Story, Freak Show, Season 4, Episode 4, Edward Mordrake, Part 2. Jim and Maggie have a run-in with the Twisted Clown, as you do. Meanwhile, Elsa recalls her days in Germany.
It's far more interesting when you do it with the accent. Yes, yes. Nadim gave this one a 7.5.
So,
remember in episode 500 when I said this show has a tendency to start nosediving?
Yes. And so it begins.
And so it begins in earnest. Let's see. What is next?
Speaking of which.
Oh, Homeland. Edmund, I'm just going to go ahead and let you continue here.
Okay. We have two episodes here. Homeland, Season 4, Episode 5, About a Boy. Carrie works a frightened asset. Quinn and Farah stake out a new suspect.
Okay. And, what would you give this one?
I realize I'm in that situation where it was long enough ago. I'm just separating. Remember between the two episodes. I think I would give this 6.5.
Okay, I gave this one a 7. Yeah, this continued the troubling activities of the previous episode.
Yeah,
which is pretty much what kept this from going any higher than average for me.
Yeah.
However.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will give them credit for is that, you know, is that yes, I mean, they are having people acknowledge how creepy this is, but it's still just, you know, there is now this, you know, huge elephant rearing its head again about, you know, yes, why do people consider Carrie competent enough to be in this position of responsibility?
Okay, but I will
yes.
point out, as became apparent in the next episode,
yes.
That the casting was, I think, very intentionally they casted a bit young for the character in order to just accentuate the uncomfortableness of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because within the plot, he's a med student.
Mm-hmm.
He's of age.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's not that far off the reservation. However, she is taking things into hand, literally,
yes.
that she shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite as far off the reservation as it could have been, but it's still bad. But I had to remind myself of that, especially when they started really emphasizing it in the next episode. It's like, he's an adult.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It was like, okay, I got it. But thank you for kind of leaving that somehow in doubt for two episodes. Just because the age difference is there. But anyway, the next one. If you don't mind.
Next one is Season 4, Episode 6, From A to B and Back Again. Carrie puts her operation in motion.
And what would you give this one?
I will give this a 7.
Okay, I give it an 8. I actually liked it, if nothing else, than for the third act of the episode, where it was refreshing to have Carrie being willing to sacrifice anything. And I found myself agreeing with her. It's going to be interesting to see how they play things with Quinn going forward. Because for all of his criticisms of her making allowances for personal stuff, that's kind of what he did.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that they did a nice job of ramping up the tension, and like I was kind of alluding to, they did a lot to, at least in my mind, repair some of the ickiness of the whole operation that Carrie was running.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were intentionally lying to each other in this episode,
yeah.
And the object of that lying was kind of aware of it, and so there was a lot of that brinkmanship taking place. Mm-hmm. Which I also enjoyed.
Yeah. No, it did feel like it was more getting back on more stable ground. For me, that's why it was sort of back to being average. You know, now it's feeling like, you know, this is an operation that within the suspension of disbelief that is watching espionage on movies or TV was getting feeling more plausible than what had been going on before. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and to be clear, we are halfway through the season, and you're at a 6.9. I'm at a 7.2.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty consistent. We definitely feel like this season is better than last season, but yeah. We both came in at 8.3 in season two.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still pretty far off of that bar.
Yeah,
to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, and that's it for the quick hits for this episode, and we are wrapping the week up here. So any last thoughts, gentlemen? Gary, anything you want to bring up?
We still have shows actually coming into the season coming up, so I'm looking forward to some of the new shows. As you said, the season never ends anymore.
No, it really doesn't. Edmund, any last thoughts on your end?
No, just that as we finish the week of 500, just to name check it one last time, with the rate that we're covering shows now, who knows how quickly we'll do the next 500.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah, thanks for that.
Who knows what'll still be on the next 500.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.